Hi, Michaela Lafrac here. The podcast you are about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela Lafrac. We are joined today by Democratic Senator Peter Welch. He was Vermont's U.S. representative from 2007 to 2023 before being elected to the Senate, where he serves alongside Bernie Sanders. Senator Peter Welch, welcome back to the program.
Thank you. It's good to be with you.
Now, Senator Welch, let's start our conversation around flood resiliency as the one-year anniversary of the summer 2023 flooding is right around the corner. You are a member of the U.S. Congress Joint Economic Committee, and just this week it shared this new report that shows that flooding could cause as much as $496 billion in losses each year in the United States. That is a massive number. Where do those losses come from?
Well, it's, you know, we had our huge flood just a year ago. Today, Florida is underwater in many, many places. And it's climate change. We all know that. And what's really, really tough is that this is going to keep flooding. And what we're seeing in Vermont, of course, is that the awareness that we have to build back in a more resilient fashion. So this is absolutely a product of climate change. And it just is a reminder of the urgency of addressing that issue.
And in this report, it noted some of the sources of those losses from, the need for infrastructure upgrades, for resiliency, commercial impacts, decreased tax revenue, and more. I'm sure you've witnessed many of these here in Vermont in the past year. Can you tell us a little bit more about what you've seen on the ground?
Well, yeah, I can. You know, the flood was a year ago, and immediately following the flood, it was all hands on deck, and neighbors helped neighbors dig out the mud and muck. Towns reacted, and people did the best to get back on their feet. But now, a year later, you know, I just recently went to Barry, I went to Johnson, I went to Hardwick. If it was your farm, if it was your business, if it was your home, you're still suffering. And FEMA is tremendous in the immediate aftermath. They come in force and really provide immediate emergency assistance. But a year down the road, there's infrastructure problems, like in Johnson with their pump station, like in Hardwick, where public resources were demolished along the bike path. And this is where it gets tough with FEMA, because at this point, you need folks who have flexibility, and you need FEMA officials who can make quick decisions. And also, the money that is necessary, the best money is the one that goes through the disaster relief program, through the CBDG program. But it's, bottom line, it's flexible, and you've got to have local leadership. So that's what I'm working on with my colleagues, particularly Brian Schatz from Hawaii. And of course, they suffered that terrible fire around the time we had our terrible flood. So that is going to be something that I think we've got to get to Vermont, the flexible funds in these towns that are going to help the farmers, that are going to help the town officials deal with infrastructure, and hopefully homeowners who are either going to get a buyout or hope to get back in their home.
Have you been satisfied with FEMA's flood response in Vermont over the past year?
You know, I have been. They came in and I thought did a tremendous job. They were very responsive, and their administration was. But here's what I've noticed. FEMA does not have the capacity for the long-term rebuilding of a community. They have the capacity for an immediate short-term response to the disaster. And that's where I think we've got to step back and reform the processes. And what I've seen is that the leadership that is going to address what's going on in Barry or in Johnson or in Ludlow, that has to be local, and they've got to be given flexibility, because those folks are totally invested in the well-being of their community. And this is where FEMA needs some adjustment, because the FEMA folks now who are attending to these issues, they come and they go. There's a lot of turnover, and they don't have the flexibility. And that's why these disaster relief funds where there is flexibility and where there can be local leadership, I think is so essential for the long-term recovery of communities.
Senator, last week you introduced the Rural Recovery Act, a bill that would essentially create a new program at the U.S. Department of Agriculture to provide rural development offices with more immediate funding for emergency recovery. This was co-sponsored by Senator Bernie Sanders and Jeanne Shaheen of New Hampshire. What exactly would a bill like this change for Vermonters if another flood were to hit?
Well, essentially, it would create that flexibility I've just been talking about and empower the local leaders to provide the response. You know, what I've seen with the floods, what we had last year in July, and what we had going back to Irene, was that it was like local select boards that got out their Rolodex and started calling up people in the community to come out with their backhoes or their front-end loaders or do whatever it was and get whatever equipment was needed to respond. Well, that flexibility you need to have down the road, okay? You know, the immediate response is absolutely urgent and essential, but there are things that require long-term effort because it's rebuilding. And this legislation would essentially create the flexibility and the resources for those rural communities that don't have that administrative infrastructure to deal with the massive impact of a big flood. And Senator Shaheen is a great ally on this, and Bernie and I will be working on this along with Becca.
Well, as we have a couple of calls coming in, as we wait for those to get ready, I do want to ask you, Senator, about this election year that we are facing. It's 2024. President Joe Biden is, of course, running for re-election against former President Donald Trump. Late last month, President Trump was convicted of 34 criminal charges stemming from his efforts to hide an alleged affair with an adult film star. And after that conviction, you said, and I'm quoting here, "No one is above the law, so it's a real affirmation for that founding principle of our country." But you also said that the verdict will probably strengthen Trump's popularity with his base of supporters. I wonder, Senator, if you feel the same way about Congress's probes of President Trump. How long will and should this process of investigating and prosecuting the former president continue?
Well, there's that. The current Republican Congress is investigating Biden. They're not investigating Trump. I mean, they're running cover for him. You know, the Republican-led Congress is they just impeached the attorney general, no basis to do it. They've been working hard to try to impeach Biden. They finally had to give up on that. So the investigations that are being done by the Republican led Congress are all about Biden and all about the Biden administration. And in fact, today, former President Trump is here in Washington. He met with the House and he's asking the Speaker of the House to somehow come up with a way to do away with those 34 felony convictions that he just got in New York City.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong here, but I do believe there was a Senate panel that last month launched a probe into Trump's alleged quid pro quo with energy executives. It does seem like there's kind of, at least from the outside, for kind of the layman's perspective, is ongoing investigations into both Biden and Trump. It could be hard to keep track of them. I'm just curious, like, what role you think these are all playing in the election season that we're in?
You know, my view on this is that as far as the public is concerned, it's kind of a sideshow. Mm-hmm. I think the jury conviction is different. You know, I think there's a cynicism that the public has about congressional investigations, whether it's Democrat-led or Republican-led. By the way, I think they're necessary if they're done responsibly. I do. But on the other hand, where you have an independent group of citizens, including on that 12-person jury, a person who identified as getting their news solely from Truth Social, the Trump media operation, and they listened to the evidence and came to a unanimous conclusion that Trump was guilty, then I think that has a lot more credibility because it's a jury of the peers, it's everyday citizens who come to this conclusion. And I do respect the jury verdict. And of course, that was followed on the heels, or it was followed, of course, with the jury verdict in the Hunter Biden case, where that jury came to the unanimous conclusion that Hunter Biden had violated the law. So in fact, you know, I'm a lawyer and have a lot of time in front of juries, and I continue to have enormous respect for the wisdom of juries.
Hmm. Well, let's take a call from a listener here. We have John in Waterford on the line. John, you're with U.S. Senator Peter Welch. What are your questions or comments?
Thank you, Senator. Senator, I really applaud you for taking up the local funding issues that are, you know, impacted the state after the floods last year. But I can't help but sort of, you know, be impacted by the news constantly. And it seems like, you know, you get a 1-2 punch every time you turn on a station with more and more money going to the Ukraine or more and more money going to Israel and Palestine. I think today it was even announced that there's a $50 billion loan that's going to be backed by Russian assets that will be seized. And it just seems like Congress, the government, the president is completely focused in other areas. And I applaud you for bringing it back, you know, to your representative people of the state of Vermont. But how can you change that mindset or drive this home to that we are not interested in sending billions of dollars to the Ukraine when we didn't even have a post office in Montpelier until like a month and a half ago?
Mm. John, thank you so much for that call. Senator Welch.
You know, John, in all candor, we've got to do both, okay? You've got to make your priorities, but we've got domestic priorities. The post office has been a mess, and we see that with what the delays were in getting a post office reopened in Montpelier. We see the need to provide flood relief, and that's true in Vermont right now, and it's going to be true in Florida. So I think meeting our domestic needs is absolutely essential and front and center for me. And, you know, I talk to Vermonters constantly, and they're really worried about their property taxes, and I'm worried about them getting hammered with a big increase in property taxes, and groceries are expensive. So anything and everything I can do to try to address the real needs of Vermonters, that's priority number one for me. But the United States also has security issues. And what Putin did with his brutal invasion, wanton killing of innocent civilians in Ukraine, violating what has been the doctrine since World War II that you respect territorial integrity, I do support coming to the assistance of Ukraine. And I am supportive of us playing in our role in that. The Israeli-Palestinian issue is different, which we can talk about, but we do have to have a focus first and foremost on our domestic security, and that means taking care of our citizens, but we have foreign national security responsibilities as well.
John, thank you for your call. Senator Peter Welch, in the time that we have left with you, I want to make sure we touch on a topic that we don't get to talk to you very often about, which is the arts. In April, you introduced the STAGE Act. STAGE is an acronym for Supporting Theater and the Arts to Galvanize the Economy Act. First, I've got to ask, does each lawmaker in Congress employ somebody who's just really good at acronyms to come up with these bill names for their office?
Well, I'm not so great at coming up with it, but people in my office sometimes are.
All right. Well, it's a skill. So this new bill would establish a grant program to support professional nonprofit theaters, many of which are still struggling mightily since the pandemic. With all the different demands on federal and state funding right now, why did you decide to put this emphasis on theater?
You know what? I think it's absolutely vital to our well-being. And what I've seen with these community theaters, the nonprofit theaters in White River, in Burlington, in Bennington, in Bellows Falls, is that local citizens, oftentimes parents, get together and put an enormous amount of effort into creating opportunities for their kids. And these local theaters also play a big role in the local economies because they have a following. People come to the village center, they go to restaurants, and the opportunities that really are significant to me, as well as the community building, are for kids. There's a lot of kids who find themselves through theater. And when you get the parents who are working so hard, giving so much of themselves to create these opportunities, that's really, really important. And one of the things about COVID that was so tough is that it isolated people. We all had to be in on our own, and the downtown started getting weaker. And these local theaters face all the inflation challenges and shortage of funds challenges that others do. So for me, it's about kids, it's about communities. And that has to be, in my view, always a priority for us.
Well, we got an email ahead of today's show from Yulia in South Royalton, who writes, there is plenty of evidence of educational and other benefits for students when they are given regular opportunities to explore and practice theater arts. Our amazing local theaters and community theaters do a lot to help with that, but they cannot possibly reach all students. And Yulia is hoping for additional federal and state funding to be allocated to theater programs at all school levels in Vermont. Let's take one more call for Senator Welch before we let you get back to work. Jesse Lynn is in Essex. Jesse Lynn, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks so much for taking my call. My name is Jesse Lynn. I am the president of the American Nurses Association here in Vermont, and myself and my board of directors are heading to D.C. the last Thursday in June, and hopefully are getting a chance to meet with Peter Welch. So thank
Can't
you so
wait.
Much. We look forward to it and hope to see you soon. So thanks for all you're doing. And we're looking forward to getting to see you.
Well, you know what? We'll see you. And I just want to thank our nurses, the frontline folks who got us through COVID. I mean, I think about what you did. All of us were told to stay at home, you know, and to be safe. You had to walk into the hospital and see people who were sick and be exposed and work with all that incredible gear. And it's amazing to me the resilience that was required for our nurses to serve our Vermonters. So I just want to express to you my gratitude, but I know I speak on behalf of all of us in Vermont who want to say thank you to the nurses, our frontline healthcare workers that did so much to get us through COVID. Thank you.
And thank you, Jesse Lynn, for that call, and enjoy your trip to D.C. Senator Peter Welch, thank you so much for your time today. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.